camera.
Hello, I'm Felicia Vereen, always known as Fee.
Hey, Fee, and I'm your girl, Sherita Three, better known as Red.
And we are Inspire Her, the Total Woman podcast all about uplifting you. Yes. Because friends, face it, you are awesome.
We'll be chatting up about topics we love to talk about, all the things we as women must juggle every day, and the issues we complain about.
But who's listening? Girl, we'll chat about the struggle, the job, and about him. Mm. You know who we're talking about.
Girl.
That boo, husband, boyfriend, ex, whatever you're calling them today. Mm. Our lovely hellions, kids.
Our angels. But seriously, friends, life happens, and we don't always get a chance to talk about it. We take it on the chin, and we keep it moving.
Because that's what we were told to do.
Yep.
But here on Inspire Her, the Total Woman podcast with Red and Fee, we are the friends you love to hang out with.
We are here to inspire her,
the Total Woman.
Yeah. Well, hello, ladies.
Hello. Hello.
So Fee is under the weather today, but you guys are in good hands because I got Raven and I got Yolanda here to talk about our subject today. Y'all know Raven. Raven is like a fan favorite on the show, but I'm going to let her introduce herself again and then we'll go to Yolanda. Tell us a little bit about you, what you do, and all that good stuff.
Okay, I'm Raven. I'm a Pisces. I just got to put that out there. You know, season is, you know, upcoming.
Yes.
No, I'm Raven Daniels. I'm a licensed professional counselor. I am the owner operator at my own private practice, Raven Ridge Counseling and Wellness, here in Chester, Virginia. I currently work in this field, been in the field for a while. But before that, I have some other experience. I was a teacher before, and can't tell now, but I used to be in the fitness industry as well. That's what my bachelor's degree, you know, is in, long, long time ago. But, and of course, I am related by marriage to Mrs. Three, aka Red. She is my cousin by marriage. And yeah, I'm just, you know, excited to be on the show tonight, just to be able to chat it up with these other ladies and the audience.
All right. Thank you. And welcome, Miss Yolanda Travis.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be here. You finally let me come on the show.
Yes.
Well, I'm in the mental health space as well. I'm an LPC and an LSATP. That's a licensed substance abuse treatment practitioner. I am the founder and owner of Comprehensive Counseling Solutions, also located in Chester. I guess we'll call it Chesterfield. Been in business about 8 years. We do a variety of community mental health things. We just started some intensive outpatient for adults. We'll be adding kids pretty soon. I do substance abuse work. I do all kind of assessments from immigration to DUI, just everything, name something. there's a lot of work that comes out of that little shop. So we're headed into year 8 and I'm just glad to be here.
Yeah, well, thank you so much. So we all got the LPCs in the house.
Hello, so, people.
I wanted to have more of us, but I think this is great. For some reason, it just kind of sparked in my mind, like, what makes us who we are? Like, what shapes us into the adults, into the people that who we are? Why are people mean? Why do people have trust issues? Why do people have low self-esteem? Why do people have anger issues? Like, what are their experiences, or what could possibly be some of their experiences that make them who they are today? And before we got on camera, we were just kind of talking about, you could have people from the same family, grew up with the same parents, and two totally different people. So talk to me about that, ladies. What you guys think?
Well, I think, you know, it is, you know, it's a little bit of biology. It's a little bit of your environment. But mostly it is the stories that we tell ourselves about those events that happen. You know, we all have a running dialogue in our head. Mm-hmm. You know, you put values on, you know, your actions or your experiences based on what you're experiencing at the time. You know, I'm bad, I'm good, I'm funny, I'm smart, I'm, you know, a hellion, I'm a liar, I'm bad, this was bad or this was good. You could have two kids do the exact same thing. And one kid takes it as, you know, he failed. That's a lesson. Mm-hmm. You know, my parents think I'm the best, so I'm going to try again. And you have that another kid, same thing, same parents. Maybe those parents say, you know, I'm just sick of you today. Mm-hmm. You know, cut it out. I've told you that 18 times. Stop. You can't do it. Stop trying. He's going to tell himself a different story than the other kid is going to tell him. And that's going to shape him.
Wow. Those are some good points. What do you think, Raven?
I agree with a lot of what, you know, Yaronda said. And I think the question, it sounds like a very short and simple question, but it is a very like complex answer. Because I think there's so many different factors that contribute to why we are the way that we are. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, I think when you kind of messaged me and you talked about the topic, the first thing that I thought of, which is like the automatic thought I had, was like, I instantly thought of nature versus nurture. Mm-hmm. And so for like people who don't know what that is, nature versus nurture is like, nature is more so, yeah, nature is kind of like that, the biological type of factors that kind of make you you. And then the nurture part is the, like the upbringing and like the influence of like your care, you know, givers, community and stuff like that. And so I think, you know, that's one of the things that plays, you know, a large part in it. And I think back to what, you know, Yaronda said, when I think about the nature part, when I think about those two children who grew up in the same home and may have had the same parents, pretty much the same experience, mm-hmm. but because of they are just different people, they could have experienced those experiences in a different way. Right. And so you have like, it could be, you know, a child, two children who grew up with, you know, with both parents, and someone on the outside will say, oh, you know, well, you two grew up with both parents, you should be well-rounded. And one of them is like, well, yeah, I am. I felt that I was, you know, I had a well-rounded childhood. I had both of my parents. I had a sibling. And then the other sibling could say, I hated it. My experience was different. You know, and it could be something as simple as their birth order.
Right.
That is so true. I have two children. They are 29 and 24. And, you know, they had the same mom, but they had a different mom. Because just as they were growing up, I was growing up. So mm-hmm. I wasn't the same mom, you know, when I had my first daughter that I was when I had my second child. I was a little bit more laid back. I was more experienced. My oldest daughter thugged it out with me. She had to be independent. Yeah. You know, we say that, you know, she had to be independent. I didn't have time. Hey, look, hold a bottle, potty. We got to move on. We got things to do, right? Mm-hmm. You're young. You got something to prove. So she is now learning her internal dialogue from me, right? What am I telling her? Good job when you can do something on your own. Good job when you can, you know, lighten the load on mom because you learn how to do, I don't know, your laundry at 10. Like, who does mm-hmm. that? But my youngest daughter, same mom, mm-hmm. totally different
experiences.
Woman, different woman, same mom, different yeah. woman.
Different woman. And mm-hmm. you would think, I mean, night and day. And you think, well, God, what made her so much more laid back, so much more adventurous than the first daughter who was a rule follower? She didn't want to, you know, break the rules. She didn't want to challenge. But my youngest kid is a honey badger. She challenges everything.
So how are they today? Like, same. You know, they were like the same way? Okay.
Same. The oldest daughter is very kind of regimented. She's, you know, follows the rules, balances her checkbook, whatever, you know, And the other one, hey, Shelly, I see you. And the other one is like, you know, what is she her favorite phrase is, I'm here for a good time, not a long time.
Right. Yes. Okay.
Come on, Raven. No.
No, I only, you know what? So you, I think you are the perfect person to kind of like answer this question then. So you said that you were the same mom, different woman. So why is it? Like, how did you show up differently with your younger baby that she does have that attitude, like good time, not a long time?
You know, I was a more relaxed parent. I had laid back. I was more established. I didn't have some of the demons I was working with when I was younger, you know. And she just got a different experience. She got a lot of yeses because I could, right? Yeah. So she didn't grow up hearing no a lot, right? Mm-hmm. So she feels like she can go and eat an elephant. She'll just do it, bite at a time, no problem. My oldest daughter, you know, she got a stressed out mom. Hey, Robin, my line sister showing up. Y'all.
Hey, for you.
Hi,
hey, y'all. So she got a different mom, right? Mm-hmm. And that plays into it too. Not just their birth order, but what our birth order is as parents and what stage we are.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, come on, Red, you know, you have adult kids. It's different. Yeah,
it's definitely different. And I can definitely attest to it because my oldest son, he was the more independent one. And he says I babied the twins. And, you know, he was like, I needed his support because I'm doing the same thing that you were doing, going to school and trying to make a better life. Now, you know, fortunately, being able to give them some of the things that I wanted to give them, but couldn't at one point. So, yeah, I feel like my twins, I feel like they're not as independent as I would like for them to be. Hopefully they'll grow into that, but that's what it is. And I think I was fifth of six. So I know that when you have six kids, you can kind of split them. So essentially I was that middle child. It was my brother. I'm kind of the middle child syndrome.
Both of us said, mm.
I don't think I have that middle child syndrome. I don't think.
Well, I can speak from my personal experience as the child of the parents. So like, I'm thinking about you, Yolanda, when you say like you had that.
The Delta's in the house.
Hello. Hey, Soros.
Oh, it doesn't show us the count of how many people are in here.
We got 10.
Y'all okay. Good.
There. Yeah.
Look, I went really quick and I shared it on my Facebook page with my 300 friends. yeah, but so I think I can speak from my experience as the oldest child on both sides of my family. So my mother has two children. I'm her oldest child. There's 5 years between me and my brother. And then on my dad's side, I'm the oldest child. My dad has six children. I grew up with just one sibling. I grew up with my mom's, you know, son. And the age between me and my youngest sibling is 25 years. I'm 25 years older than my youngest sibling.
Wow.
And then I'm like, what, 23 years younger, and then 21 years. I'm, you know, there's like 20 years between me and that younger, you know, that those younger set of siblings. So when you were talking, Yolanda, about your children, your daughters getting a different mom, I think I definitely got that with my dad. I was my dad's first child. So we have a unique experience together, but the relationship that he has with my younger siblings, there's a stark difference. There is a stark difference. Like, those girls can work him right now. And I don't have a problem with saying that because they know it, he knows it, we all know it. And it's all good, but you know, and I didn't necessarily have that. He is a different man. And so, you know, we don't, our differences are, you know, there's just stark differences and that's just how it is. And so we are different people. And I think, you know, that obviously plays, you know, some part in it because, of, you know, the way we were raised and things like that. So
Definitely. And you are a middle child, Red. Raven, mm-hmm. you're the oldest. I'm an only child.
Oh, wow. Mm.
Yeah. So, and what happens with that is you always have to fend for yourself. Mm-hmm. You know, and with a mom that works a lot, you got to fend for yourself. You have to defend for yourself. You have to, you know, comfort yourself. So you do a lot of work inside yourself, right? Mm-hmm. Because there's nobody to have those dialogues with. Mm-hmm. There's no sibling to say, "Ooh, mom is getting on our nerves." So what kind of made me who I am is I do a lot of work in my head, right? I figure it out. And, you know, that whole independence thing, it could look different to different people depending on what kind of mood I'm in, you know? So it could look like Miss Life of the party and I go home and I'm exhausted because the perception is that you're this extrovert. But in reality, I'm just doing what I need to do to get to the end of the party.
Right. And the only children are like more independent and more self-reliant. Do you find yourself, did that shape you into like not wanting to ask for help or?
Oh, definitely.
Asking for help?
Definitely. And that plus having a mom that expected you to kind of figure it out. Like, you know, she was working, you know? So it was like, figure it out. And we'll discuss it when I get home. You know? Right. And
you know what? I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Raven.
I'm listening to you, and it's so interesting you hearing your experience as an only child, but I feel like your experience largely mirrors my experience as the oldest child.
Absolutely.
As well. Specifically the part about like figuring out things in your head, living in your head. And especially when you said that whole thing about playing those different roles and then like being the life of the party. And then you're like exhausted once you get home. And then like Sharita saying like, do you find it difficult to ask for help? And I'm like, I'm screaming, hell yeah. Yes.
Hell yeah.
Yes. Cause I'm like a problem solver. I kind of like fix things, you know, you find a way. And then even if it don't work out, you just deal with it. You just kind of move, you know, on it. I have that same, you know, struggle even now, even with being in the helping profession, and I can preach that to people all the time, but it's still something that I have inside. I'm going to throw out this phrase that I know y'all are very well versed with. I think there's this core belief that I have that I just have to take care of things on my own.
And my core belief is I have to take care of it on my own because everyone expects me to. And I don't want to let people down. So that is my whole thing. That's the script. You know, I preach this whole main character thing. We're all the main character. What script are you reading from? Mm-hmm. Right? My script is, you know, hey, independent woman, you do these things, you figure it out, and then you ride off into the sunset and you cry in the car. You know,
right? Absolutely.
You don't cry at work. There's no crying at work.
Yeah.
Heavy on crying in the car.
There's no crying when you get home because you got to take care of everybody else. So you cry in the car. And so those, you know, having to put that face on, if you're really not inside your body, you know what I mean? If we're not mindful, that story can dominate. That dialogue can dominate.
Yeah.
You know, and so I've had to do a lot of work with asking for help and not feeling weak or not feeling like a failure. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Because if I don't ask for help, I am depleted at some point. I mean, you know, Sharita knows when I first started my business, she had a business right across the sidewalk. Mm-hmm. And she walked into my little one room shop and offered me help. And she, what she doesn't know is I was having a really bad day.
Oh,
nobody thinks that you need help. And when this woman comes in, she's bubbly. She's like, girl, we're going to get this thing together. I can do this. I can do that. When she walked out, I swear she probably heard me crying.
Mm.
Because you, one, starting a business by yourself is rough. Starting a business being a brown girl is rough. Being a brown girl in Chesterfield is rough. And taxes are high. But you know what I mean? And so nobody was stepping up saying, hey, let me help you get this together. Right? So everything was OJT.
Mm.
Yeah. And the my internal narratives helped me get through that part, right? But it doesn't mean it tickled. It wasn't fun.
Right. And so I'm going to hear you say that, Yaronda, because you preach a lot about, or you not preach, you stress a lot about self-care on your page. It's all about self-care. And so I hope you're doing that yourself.
You know, I'm learning. And when I put that stuff out, I'm really talking to myself.
Okay.
Right? And people will think, oh, thank you for sharing that. Or you should, girl, I'm talking to my, I'm the one who's out of bed today. Mm-hmm. Y'all don't see what I.
Yeah, I'm trying to remind myself. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so I feel like what makes us, back to the topic, who we are, is what we tell ourselves about what we experience.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, we can talk about our parents and mama issues and daddy issues, and that's a part of it. But how do we perceive that?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think too, like right after when like Red introduced the topic, the first thing I thought of was like nature versus nurture. But the next thing that I went to was like core beliefs, because I feel like, you know, it's that, that's really part of that internal dialogue that we carry with us day in and day out. Mm-hmm. And it just really shapes our perception on how we experience, you know, certain things. Like even now, like little Raven, little Yaronda, little Sharita may have formed these beliefs. But then when adult Raven, adult Yaronda, adult Sharita experiences something, it's linked right back, you know, to those experiences that have formed, you know, those beliefs. And so I think that's a huge part of it, like a huge, huge part. What did we learn about ourselves, about other people, about the world growing up? What was confirmed, you know, with our experiences through life, and how we carry that, you know, day in and day out?
Exactly. What was reinforced? And I know you guys know all about the mirror exercise. I'm sure you do it with some of your clients. What was so helpful to me is I'm trying to rewrite those stories, some of them that don't serve me anymore, because as we grow, you know, our dialogues need to change if it doesn't serve us anymore, right? It was good to protect me and to get me to this point, but now I need some more. The dialogue has to change. So what I did, and I have not said this to anybody, I'm saying to y'all and folks listening. So what I did was, because I wanted to change those stories. So I printed out this little picture, and Raven, I don't even know, you must have been reading my mind. Little Yaronda, I have a picture of me when I was 7, right? Seven, the world was good, honey. The parents were together. I was the apple of everybody's. Those were the good days, right? Yeah. But little did I know, a year after that, I was going to have some big changes, right? Parents divorce, all kind of stuff happened. So what I do is I take that little picture, I keep it in my bathroom. And every morning, me and her get ready to go to work, honey, you know, and we talk, and I tell her, you know, you would be so proud because we are doing so well.
Yes.
All that stuff that you thought, you know, all those stories or whatever, me and her have a whole conversation, because I got to heal that girl.
Right, right.
You know, she was so heartbroken. She had so many, you know, disappointments. So me and her together in the morning, when I don't feel like getting up, I take my little thing on my medicine chest. I talk to her, and she gets me together, and we go to work.
That is awesome. I think it's a great idea. Like Shelly said, pour into her. Rochelle said, pour into her. I think that's great.
Yeah.
Well, you guys, why do you feel that we struggle with vulnerability? Why do we struggle with being vulnerable?
So I think that goes back to something that Fee said a few minutes ago. She said, I also think part of who I am were characteristics of the strong women that raised me. I watched them intently. So I think what it is, and I have these conversations with Black women of different ages in my office all the time. Mm-hmm. Young Black women, older Black women. I don't really think, when I think about the women in my life, the older women, I just don't know where they had people and spaces that were laid out for them to be able to be vulnerable themselves and to really have their stories heard, exactly, affirmed, validated. Like, it's just always this strong Black woman, you know, trope. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we saw that. And it's just like, okay, you've got the single mom who's raising her daughter. And she's like, look, you can't be out here depending on a man. You got to get yourself together. You got to do this. You got to keep yourself together. You know, we don't have time for tears. You know, we don't have time for that. Yeah. You've got to work. You've got to hustle. I think a lot of us, not all of us, a lot of us have grown up like that. And we've heard that. And so it's like, where's the space for vulnerability?
Mm-hmm. And I think you're right. That I talk about this whole soft life that, you know, people seem to be searching for, you know, Black women. I don't know when we get it. Mm-hmm. But that space to be vulnerable, Raven, mm-hmm, like, we didn't have time for that. My mother used to tell me, I have, again, that dialogue. If you want it, go get it. Period.
Right.
There was no crying. There was no, you know, I got a boo-boo. You want to learn how to ride a bike? Go learn how to ride a bike.
Right, right.
But crying is not you learning how to ride a bike.
Mm. Right. It's not part of it. There's no, and I think another thing too is something that I really love working with people. There hasn't been a lot of space for just Black people in general for grief.
Yeah.
I mean, true grief, you know, whether it's heartbreak, whether it's the grief, you know, stemming from systemic racism, you know, trauma, you know, death, you know, whatever it is, there's not a lot of space that we've had. I mean, we know this now, even at the age where we are, we know a lot of Black therapists. We know that therapy is like the norm for us, but still, Raven, when you look at the
20 years younger than me and Sharita now.
No, I'm not.
We know how old you are. I know how old you are. I mean,
but what a side note, when you said your daughter was 29, I'm like, right, you got a 29. Mm-hmm.
How you feel about them apples?
You look good, girl.
29. My oldest will be
29
this year.
Yeah, so. Look, so this Black ain't cracking over here, But no, so just thinking about that, even though we know a lot of therapists, therapy is a norm for us. This is our day-to-day. This is our life. We shoot this off the tongue. But when you look at like national statistics and things like that, we're still a very small part of the mental health, you know, field. Yeah. And there's still so many people that look like us and have experiences like us that don't access, you know, these resources and services because there's still a stigma there. Because I'm thinking about my mom, you know, she went through a divorce, you know, she went through things. I know she could have benefited from some therapy or some support back then, but nobody was out here saying, go, you know, see someone. They weren't doing that for the people that were raising us. And so,
Nobody was giving them a soft place to land.
They were. They had to just keep producing, keep being.
Mm-hmm. Keep being.
Right. And to their own chagrin, still taking care of other people to their mm-hmm. own chagrin. And this is why I know y'all see women in their 60s and things like that in your office telling you stories that they have never told anybody else.
Absolutely. And anybody. It's funny because what we're talking about is part of what Fee and I wrote in our intro, like, girl, who's listening? Girl, nobody. But we keep it moving because that's what we were taught to do.
And that's mm-hmm. why people don't have patience for our sorrow. People don't have patience for our, you know, misery, our, you know, our hurt. If there's no space, just like
they don't have it for themselves. Yeah, so they don't know how to hold the space for anybody else. They don't know how to hold it for themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, who's gonna listen to me every day talk about, you know, I don't like this about myself or I need to work on that? Mm-hmm. Nobody is holding that space. So one thing that I think that I do well, I don't do a lot well, but I do this well. You know, I find because I am an only child and I don't have that, you know, that built in, you know, community, I make my community. My friends mm-hmm. who are watching this thing, they are my family, mm-hmm. right? So we as women, we do a good job at finding that sister girl, you know, that really knows who we are. You know, not who people think we are, but they know me. And they hold that space and we do it for each other, right? So I think my mother in particular didn't have a lot of close girlfriends. Mm-hmm. So, you know, therapy, girlfriends were therapy back in the day.
Right. And, right.
You know, that's part of what made us.
Salon. We went to the hair salon. And we
And my mother did not. She didn't have that. She doesn't have little sister girls that go to brunch on Sunday. Mm-hmm. And so me kind of learning that whole independence thing from her, I'm glad that I did not, or I learned in reverse how to like reverse engineer that loneliness, right? That made her a lot of who she is, right? Mm-hmm. And you know, we look at our parents and go, she's great. I love this. I love this. I take this. Mm-hmm. I don't want to take that.
Right.
So I don't want to do that. And that makes us who we are as well. Mm-hmm. The things we do and the things we choose not to do.
Because we do have choices. And I think that's like a big thing to look at too. I think a lot of times people can get stuck in kind of like, I won't say blaming their past, but really just like relying on that their past and putting a period like at the end of that story, like what you talked about. And that's something that I love too, that, you know, that thought of rewriting the story. Because see, the story that 7-year-old Yaronda may have experienced was, my parents got divorced because of me. I was a bad little girl. My dad didn't love me enough. He didn't love, you know, and that's why he left, you know, and then you carry that, but then you rewrite that story and then you know, like the real thing, and it frees little Yaronda from the responsibility of what happened to her when she was, you know, little.
And if we don't do that work, and whatever it is, it could be a bad relationship with a man. That was my fault, girl. I let it go too long. You know, we say things like that or whatever. Mm-hmm. Whatever that story is that we tell ourselves, we have to be very careful about taking responsibility for things that, like you said, Raven, I don't, you know, I am not that powerful. We think we are that powerful.
Right.
Things happen. And I tell my clients this. Now, you are not that powerful. Because if you were that powerful and you could make bad things happen, then you would also have the power to do what?
Exactly.
The good things happen. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But we have not done that. So trust me, you know, everything that goes on around you is not because of you. Sometimes it's in spite of you.
Right. Oh, I like that. I told somebody before, I say, you know, and I feel like it's a lot of anxiety. I feel like a lot of Black women, you know, really suffer from a lot of anxiety. But I think because people just really just think anxiety is just being worried about stuff, that they really dismiss a lot of our experiences. But a lot of times anxiety really will have you. It's an issue with control a lot of times. Mm-hmm. And anxiety will really have you thinking that, like, you really, like you said, are in control more than what you really are.
Yes.
And so when you do make a mistake or when things go wrong, like you suffer immensely because you think it's your fault, because you know, think that you're in control. And it's like, it's a false sense of control. Yeah, you weren't.
It's all of those cognitive distortions that we have. And we don't work those things out. You know, there's no way that all these things can, I mean, I'm not the center of the universe for real. Right.
Everything's not about us. It's not about me.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, we always talk about controlling what we can control, but we're caregivers, right?
Yeah. So, ladies, for those who don't go to therapy or haven't experienced a great therapy, what advice or tips or suggestions, recommendations would you give to someone who may be in this position with the anxiety and the internal struggles and those kind of things? What are some tips that you can give them or some exercises that they could do?
Well, one thing I tell people is trust your nervous system. Listen to your body. Be inside of your body. If you are having thoughts that make your palms sweaty, that have your heart racing, and I call it the jits, it give you the jits, that's just a thought that's giving you that physical reaction. Work on changing that thought, right? Trust your nervous system. If you are jittery, we talked about anxiety, if you feel in some kind of way, that's what we call it, trust that you need to listen to that and do some work. Change it. If you are jittery, if your nervous system freaks out when you're in front of a certain person, you know that is your body's way of telling you you need to adjust maybe your environment, maybe the way that you deal with this person. Some type of change needs to occur. Trust your nervous system. If it feels bad, change it.
I would add to that, I think when you asked that question, the very first thing that I thought of was kind of going back to that thought that I said before about not taking responsibility of you know, for things that aren't yours. One thing I would tell people is to, like, you know, knowing that a lot of things that happened to you, it weren't your fault. So, like, if your parent gave you away, or if someone, you know, abused you, you know, if you suffered some type of, like, severe injury or, you know, trauma, just know that it wasn't your fault. Like, let yourself off the hook for, you know, what happened. Grieve, you know, what you lost, whatever it was. Grieve whatever you lost. And then also know that you may not have been in control before, but know that you are now and that you have choices. And there's just so much that you can do to heal yourself, to soothe yourself, and to really write this next chapter of your life. Somebody else may have written some chapters for you before, but, like, in this moment now, you're safe. You're able, and, you know, and you can really write this new chapter, write this chapter of your life the way that you want to. You have permission to do that.
Permission. Big word I use all the time. Give yourself permission to be soft. Mm-hmm. Give yourself permission to rest. Give yourself permission to grieve. Give yourself permission to give yourself whatever it is that you think that you need. Listen to your body. Quiet yourself. You know what it is. But do we give ourselves permission to do so? Like, I really want to take Wednesday off. Can I do that?
We struggle with self-compassion.
Show yourself compassion. And I think Black women are so hard on themselves. I'm hard on me. And I have been hard on my daughters. And my friends, you know, because go cry in the car. But, you know, you got to give yourself a break.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I want to say one more thing, too, real quick, Sharita, because I wanted to talk about this earlier when Yoronda talked about how she takes that picture of herself when she was younger. So I have done an exercise like that before. I feel like that is such a powerful exercise. It's kind of like... Because it's kind of like you going back and being the friend or the person or the confidant or the whatever you needed in that moment to really tell you the truth, to really sit with you and kind of come to your rescue. It's like you reparenting, you know, yourself. Going That's back exactly to yourself. Yeah. So even if you just take, and this is for someone who's just looking for, like, an exercise, even if you just take a picture of yourself at, like, a pivotal or significant time in your life, it could be any, really at any age, mm-hmm. and you speak to that person and you tell them, listen, you says, what age can you go back to, ladies? What depends. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So now you guys in the audience, like, I'm sitting here thinking, like, what age would I go back to?
And I've done, and Raven, I've done that with, you know, the teenage girl, mm-hmm. you know, the teenage Yoronda was off the chain. You know, she needed to be guided and protected, and she needed mm-hmm. a lot of things that, you know, my mom was doing the best she could.
Yeah. Right?
Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we had to eat. But there are things that emotionally that girl needed. She needed to be protected, right?
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. I've got the little 7-year-old, she's cute as a button. Mm-hmm. And, you know, me and her talk, she's the one who gets me to go to work, right? She gets me up because, you know, I want her to know we hit daily. I want her to be proud of that, right?
I like that.
Yeah, because she thought we were going to be a teacher. Right. And I tell her, girl, teaching was not for us. This is right. And so at different stages, you needed different things.
Yeah.
And I think if we can do that for ourselves, that opens up a whole new world of what we can do for everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And those exercises really have changed me. They really, really have, because you got to feel that.
You right. do. So Fee, you said what age can you go back to? So like, I would just think of like any like just significant stages of your life. And then, I don't know, you might just look through some of your pictures and you might just remember something, you might just connect with that time or that space that you were in. You can go back to who you were last year and you can speak to the person last year. You can speak to mm-hmm. the person on December 31st of last year. January 1st of last year, whatever. It's just you get to decide what parts of you you want to access and what parts you want to sit down and kind of nurture, you know, and heal. But yeah, like really talk to them. And like, I mean, you even if you just make a statement and just go back to that little girl and just say, you know, you're not bad. You're not a bad little girl.
You have lots of talent. You're going to be great.
Uh-huh.
You know, keep pushing.
So, ladies, those kids in their childhood that were told things like "you're bad" or "you're not good," how do we get those voices and that out of our kids? Like, you know, what if I'm whatever my age is, and I've been told,
"Don't tell it."
The 51-year-old Sharita. If
that's
I'm
right.
told at 8, you're not good enough, or you're not smart, or whatever. And I go through life thinking those things, I may not ever forget those things. How can I begin to move past those things?
Facts.
Okay.
Let me tell you something. Here's something I was never telling you about. So when I was 5, I had uncles. We used to roughhouse. And I fell on the table, knocked all my teeth out. So, you know, you have your baby teeth and then your grown-up teeth start coming in. Maybe I was 6. Maybe, I don't know. But either way, there are some photos of me where I have a perfect smile. That's because I had a plate. I had a partial. I was like 7 with a partial. And that used to be like a big, horrible deal. Like, nobody wants to sit next to the girl who's got to take her teeth out at lunch.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then it was kind of embarrassing. Mm-hmm. And it was like, at that stage, I was like, I'm never going to have teeth. You know, I'm always be this, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so something like that, even if it's puberty and you have acne in a picture, girl, mm-hmm. your skin is going to turn out great. Yeah. You know, whatever it is that you need or that you wish you had had at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Speak to that.
Mm-hmm. I like surrounding yourself with positive people, which is good. You know, we grew up in a time, it's not like these kids are growing up these days. I don't even want to be raising my children in these days.
It's awful.
There's
so much to make them feel inferior or feel not good enough or not like they're not, you know, doing enough. It's a lot. But I think, you know, when you said like if you grew up, like that little girl thought that she wasn't enough or whatever, it's just like, you kind of like, you sometimes you got to flex on, you know, people. And sometimes you have to flex on that, on your younger self and be like, well, you didn't think you were this or you were that, but like, let me pull my resume out for you, little Sharita. Like, stop the press, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, this is what, and it's not even just about accolades. Mm-hmm. It's just about, like, you talk about, like, being 51, you know, years old. I mean, I have to remind people sometimes who struggle with thinking, feeling like they haven't done enough. And I'm like, okay, well, you're 51. I'm like, I always ask, have you ever been to jail? You know, have you? No, I do. I'm like, you know, how long have you been, you know, you say that you don't like your job or whatever, but, you know, how long have you been on this job? Have you always worked? Have you always been able to provide for yourself? Mm-hmm. It may not be like exactly what you want. I said, but, you know, and I'm like, you know, you got to kind of start running off your resume. And I'm like,
you're not just
this complete slouch. No, you don't have the job or the career that you want right now. You don't have, you know, certain things, but you have sustained yourself on your own for the past 35 years. You were able to raise children. You've been able to do this. You've been able to do that. Don't discount the progress that you've made in your life just because it's not, you know, just because you don't think it's significant.
It really is. I want to come sit on your couch so you can hype me up.
Right.
But you know, well, we can trade services.
We can trade. I can borrow.
Yeah. Yeah, you see me, I'll see you.
The other thing is people feeling like, I always tell people, my clients and friends, celebrate the little stuff. You ever met somebody that just, you know, they do something great, but before they could really, they don't celebrate, they're moving on to the next
thing. Planning for the next thing.
But, mm-hmm. but celebrate this event, and then move on. A lot of times we don't take time to celebrate the little stuff before we're on to the next stuff. Like, people are just never satisfied. Nothing is ever going to be enough for them. It's like,
very true. And surround yourself with people who celebrate you. Genuinely, I've got folks that celebrate me, right? I don't feel boastful. I don't feel prideful. I just feel loved, right?
That's because you're giving that out. That's because that's who you are. You're putting that out.
You're so sweet.
I mean, it is what it is. You know, people are not going to celebrate people that's just not good people.
I don't think so either. I think as much as it's, you don't really feel like that. I think you hear things like, you know, good guys finish last, or nobody cares about good people anymore. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I don't think that that's true. I think people, when they really do find people who are very genuine and authentic, I mean, you can't help but draw people to you. We know that. Right. That's why people come, you know, to us, because, you know, I'm just going to all of our, you know, horns here. I mean, I feel like, you know, obviously not just because we're licensed, but because, you know, there's some type of gift that God has given us that we have yielded to and tapped into that, you know, has made room for, you know, for the gift that we have. I mean, you just talked about being in business for 8 years, Yolanda. And I will say this, I remember the first office that you were in. I drive down Iron Bridge all the time to see that big building you in there. So, I mean,
come on, Raven.
You can't help it. The sign is this big, you know. So you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, you're doing something right, and people do gravitate, you know, towards that. Some people are looking for, you know, the real, and when they see it, you know, they latch on to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Love it.
Well, I love that. I do. Mm-hmm. Look at us on a podcast.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, I like that, Carlita. Carlita said, yes, speak to the you of yesterday with the receipts of who you are today.
I wrote that. The whole receipts thing?
Yes. That was a word.
It will surprise you, you know, how far you come, me being a single mom and, you know, remembering, like, dang, I've got almost lights getting cut off, and, you know, just
you got almost lights. I got lights cut off.
Yeah, almost getting your legs cut off.
Almost,
you know, not having to borrow money, or, you know,
yeah,
student loan stuff, just all kinds of stuff. We don't have student loan. Why
they need to forgive our student loan?
Yes, I mean, we therapists, we're in the heart of things with the we need need our we all the therapists, LPCs, LCSW, we need to get our loans forgiven.
That's another podcast. Like, yeah, we need that.
Her damn self. She ain't paying
it. I forgave mine. I'm not. I moved on emotionally, mentally. I ain't got it. I ain't able.
Almost. Yeah, everybody like give these student loans. But this has been great, guys. I really appreciate that, just to kind of being able to put our expertise, our experiences, our education, all that stuff out there to really help some people. And I hope a lot of people got something from it. When they look back at it, they can really see.
Yeah.
Those ladies, you know, they were authentic. They were genuine. We were vulnerable.
Yeah. Look, Yolanda let it all out up in here.
Don't come out of my house looking for that picture. It's on my phone if you want
to see. You said you were cute.
I was cute. I was a mess, though. But anyway.
That's something that I would give to my clients to do.
Yeah.
Younger you. So, yeah.
Write letters to your younger self. I've had clients write letters to their younger self, like, especially those who have, like, really been through like significant trauma, times where they really, felt physically unsafe, didn't know if they were going to eat and things like that. I mean, and for you to be a child and to feel physically unsafe, you didn't have the resilience or the wherewithal to know that, like, okay, at some point, you know, this may get better. At some point, I'll be able to grow up and take care of myself. You don't know that at 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years old.
But what we do know is that the body keeps score. I'm going to be on this, you know, this somatic therapy. Your body keeps score. All the trauma, all of those bad memories, all of that anxiety, all that stuff is stored.
Yes. It's
stored in us. Or we keep score. Mm-hmm. If you feel unsafe as a, I don't know, teen, right? Mm-hmm. You can have that exact same reaction as an adult. And it takes you right back to that.
Yeah. Right?
Because your body is going haywire, right? Yeah. You have to pay attention to that body. What is it that is making me feel unsafe? And like you said, Raven, now I hold the cards, right? How can I make myself feel safe? And I need to do it every day.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. I need to do it every day and I need to listen to my body. If my body starts going haywire, you know, I'm out.
You know what gets me? And when I know that I'm not feeling in my best space, I can't sleep. Aside from the menopause waking me up, I just can't sleep. It's restless.
Yeah.
It's something that's constantly on your mind. You're not able to sleep. So we know our bodies and just telltale signs when we know something is off. Something is not right.
Yeah. And you have to check in with that sometimes, because sometimes you have to, you know, a lot of times what we can do is specifically for people who are, you know, have been traumatized, there are certain behaviors and thoughts and things that they have employed during that time to keep themselves safe that they're still using now, but they're out of safety. Like, you've got all these weapons and you're not even in war anymore. And so you got to switch those weapons for safety now. Kind of like sometimes you have to remind yourself, you know, I'm not in that space anymore. I'm not in that relationship anymore. I'm not in that abusive home anymore. I'm not poor anymore.
That's what you have to change, that internal dialogue.
And I'm not poor anymore. I don't have to keep denying myself the things that I want and need. I'm not poor anymore.
Mm-hmm. That you work hard for. Yeah,
you said what?
That you worked hard.
Yeah, for. I'm not poor anymore.
Mm-hmm. It's that guilt thing. It goes back to that guilt thing. And in our community, you know, I don't know what kind of family y'all are from, but I got black things. And it's like, I remember having what they thought was a really good job. And I'm going to not have that job and start something for myself. Mm-hmm. I thought my grandmother was going to die right then that day. Girl, you better not do that. You better do this. This is safe over here. And that with relationships too. Girl, you better not leave that man. That's a good man. You know, he could have beat my teeth in. That
Right, right. He pays the bills. He takes care of you.
Yeah,
you
but know. No, that's what they were taught. That stability, that right. You know, you got a constant, you got stable in their mind. And, you know, mm-hmm. they, no, change is not always good.
And you better not show up with a new car or a new bag or a new, it's like, now, you know, you in business for yourself. You need to put your money away. Mm-hmm. You don't need to be driving all your money, or you don't need to be, you know, you need to do this. You need to do, and it's out of love, but it's also out of scarcity.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes people need to mind their business and not count your money.
Girl, and you can tell my grandma to mind her business if you want to. I don't know what kind of grandma you got, but mine hit back. So
you can say it on the way out, you know.
You
can say it on the way out,
so they can't hear you. You know what? When people give me advice like that, I take it as they love me and they care about me. I'm gonna do what I want to do anyway. Yeah. But I would rather you tell me that and let me think about it than, you know, doing your thing. Like, I think somebody asked me, you know, with the reality show we got on, you sure you want to do that? Because putting your business out there and that kind of stuff, you know. I appreciate you telling me that, and I get it, and I will take everything you said into consideration, but I'm still going to make this decision that I want to for me. But if you didn't tell me, then I'll be like, well, girl, why are you telling me that you felt that way? So I appreciate you telling me.
Yeah.
But you know what I always say? Just because someone loves you does not mean that you feel loved by them.
That's true.
Oh,
so the way that you love me may not be the way that I receive love. Mm-hmm. So for, let's say, a parent that is overprotective or, you know, super, super strict, that's out of love. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
However, it doesn't feel like love. You know, it feels like control. It feels like you don't trust me. You know, whatever that message is that you get from interacting in that way. Mm-hmm. So when we say, oh, I know it's out of love, I then say, however, it feels like this. It feels like criticism.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. I know it's out of love, grandma.
Right.
But it feels like criticism.
It's
right?
And fine. So,
what's that?
It's a very fine line.
Yeah. And so when someone says, girl, you know, I love you, but I got to tell you, and I just stop them. And just because you love me don't mean you can say anything to me.
Right. So watch your mouth.
Watch your mouth. Mm-hmm. They all know that. But it's like, where do you have to guard what you ingest? Like, we got to guard ourselves against social media, against you know, too much news. You also have to guard yourself against those good meaning relatives and friends,
right?
Because if I listen to my good meaning relatives and some of my friends, I would never do anything outside of my comfort zone.
They keep you stagnant.
Right, they keep you saved, and they like they wouldn't do it, or they wouldn't take a chance if that's not what they would do. So yeah,
because your vision is not everybody. Like, your vision is yours,
exactly.
And sometimes yours alone by yourself, a lot of people won't see it. And you know, you have to trust yourself and trust your abilities and things like that for you to be able to say, okay, I'm going to step out and do this, even though I really don't have a lot of support. You know, folks are kind of doubting me, but you know,
well, if God gave it to you, what's the rest of it?
Exactly.
He'll get you through it. Right.
Exactly.
So if my vision is mine that was given to me and me alone, I don't have to explain it.
Right.
That's true. And I don't have to ask for permission. I just have to give myself permission to trust myself.
Exactly. And that's important, trusting yourself. I was just thinking that today, just how far I've come, blessed and grateful. No one knows your story like you. Step one, sisters. Thank you, Shelley. Mm-hmm. So to end this, we're all therapists. I want to hear from both of you. Why is therapy so important?
You go first, Raven.
I think it's important because I just think it's important to be able to have a space for you to kind of like show up authentically, like in a way that you haven't been able to before, with someone that you can, who is non-biased and who can just really, who has the skills and the knowledge and then the heart to be able to hold that space for you for wherever you need to go.
Yeah.
And I just think it's just good to be able to process things, check in, and just really, it's another way of taking care of yourself, another way of, you know, soothing yourself.
Yeah, I agree. I think that in your life, in all of our lives, there are things that we want to change, right? There are feelings that we don't want to feel, you know, or there are feelings that we wish we could feel, and we don't know how to get there, right? You're not a tree. You don't have to stay planted in that space. And I think therapy opens the door for you to be more of who you are,
right,
more of who you want to be. And, you know, you're already great. If you take the time to be kind to yourself, to slow down, to actually do the work, life on the other side of that is so much sweeter. It is so much sweeter. You're not worrying. Your therapist is able to give you tools to deal with the trauma, the demons, the intrusive thoughts, the cognitive distortions, all of those things. And that's on the other side of therapy, right? This misery that we feel, this low sometimes that we feel, this rut that we say we're stuck in. If you don't want to be there and you want someone who is skilled, who wants to help you get to the other side, don't suffer.
Call me, Yaronda Travis. I feel like
you call the office, man. You don't get
that,
that
does sound like an infomercial.
I know.
But it is so true.
Let me text my therapist. I think I need another appointment. And therapists do have therapists.
We do. Yes.
And she does. You need to get a therapy. So therapist, yeah, so you know how to navigate through this thing. This is not easy. You hear so much stuff about people, and sometimes you can, that transparency and accountability, real. You hear something that, that, you know, you got to be able to process that. So,
yeah. But you got to find the right therapist, though. Like, we have to put that out there. The right therapist.
Not all created equal.
No.
Stay off for BetterHelp.
Yeah. Listen. And trust yourself. Like, when you have, if you meet with a therapist and, like, you have a consultation with them, like, ask them straight up. Tell them these things. Look, this is what I'm afraid of. This is what I need. This is what I, you know, want. Do you think you can help me? Do you have experience with that? Like, you know, you want to get the best, like, you know, you would do the same thing. Like, if you, you know, like, let's say you want to get your hair braided. You don't just pick somebody. You usually call somebody, girl, who braided your hair? Who did your hair? Send me her information. And then you start looking at her booking site and you're like, okay, let me see. Oh, she charges. Then you go back and look through her pictures. Oh, she did that. Okay. Yeah, I think I'm ready to book. You know, the same thing. Because you
don't bargain shop.
No.
Be willing to pay what you know you need to pay, or what everybody. I'm not saying just because they're cheap, they're bad, or because they're expensive, you know, they're good. But you know, be willing to put that investment, you know, in you. Invest in you.
It's definitely an investment.
Yeah, it is. And look, if you get in there and you do the work, you won't have to stay very long.
Right. And you definitely gonna have to go through the pain to get to, like Yaronda said, the other side of sunshine. You're gonna dig deep and you gonna end up telling your therapist stuff you never told anybody else.
You are. You know, we might piss you off because we're gonna challenge you a little bit. We're gonna ask you some questions you might not know the answer. You know,
but come back the next week. Don't get so pissed off that you decide I'm not going.
Or come and tell us, I'm mad at you. You said A, B, and C to me, and that made me mad. Okay, why is that?
I love that most.
Yeah, right. I'm sorry I offended you. Let me ask it a different way.
And be ready. Sometimes I get clients that, you know, they'll come through, have a powerful first session, and then they're just not ready. That's not ready. And people are really out here hurting.
And it's hard.
It's okay if you're not ready.
Yeah.
Go and try a therapist and you have this monumental session and you never go back.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
It's okay to start again. It's okay to let yourself off the hook. And maybe that wasn't the time, right? Yeah, we're not, we don't hold things. We don't take it personally. We don't assign a value to it. No. You know, no. We just kind of move on. We're there when you're ready.
Yeah.
But a lot of, I've had folks say, you know, I was coming back and, you know, it had been so long. I just felt some kind of way. Well, then come back and let's talk mm-hmm. about that feeling.
Yeah. Right?
Mm-hmm. So you're not letting me down.
Right.
No. Right. So if you try and it didn't work, try again.
Yeah. Well, try someone else.
I agree. Say try somebody else.
Yeah, or try somebody else. You know, we might not have been, you know, the person for you, but you know, it's it will get scary because you know, I'm telling you, you get the right therapist, and we, I don't know, we just have this little voodoo, this little magic, and we can look at because, no, I said it because I have had somebody, and they were like, "How did you know that?" And I'm like, you kind of told me, you just don't know you did.
Right,
you know,
right.
We just know how to listen, you know, and we know how to ask the right questions. And it is scary because you're going to have your, you know, you're going to confront parts of you that you don't like that may seem, you know, a little ugly. We accept you. It's all mm-hmm. good.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All parts of you are welcome.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, ladies. I really appreciate it. This was awesome.
Round of applause for us.
We gotta have a part two of this. This was amazing. We had a lot of comments, a lot of women in here giving great examples and stuff. We miss a mm-hmm. Phoebe. We'll see her next time, hopefully.
Yeah, feel better.
But we definitely have to do it. This again. Thank you, Shelly, Carlita, Robin. Mm-hmm. Who else we had?
Somebody else.
Yeah, it was Rochelle, Shelly. Okay. Yeah.
Erlene.
Miss Erlene.
And then
look, I don't know if I call her Miss Erlene. It just sounds like an older name. So Miss Erlene.
Miss Erlene. No, Erlene. No, you didn't. No, you didn't, Sharia.
No, I'm just saying.
Like, I know.
You just want to put some respect on her
yeah.
name.
Yeah, Tammy was here earlier.
I saw Tammy was here.
Don't beat me up, Miss Erlene.
There she go, Miss Erlene.
There she go again, Miss Erlene. Look, Miss Erlene will come up here and be like, don't call me no Miss Baby. You 51, I'm 50.
Exactly.
You older than me. I should be calling you Miss Sharice. Right, right. Miss Sharice, Miss Red.
Yes, this was awesome.
Thank you for having me. This was so fun.
It was fun.
And I haven't seen Raven in how long?
Guys, been like maybe like 2000. It was right before I got licensed. I know that. So it's been a good minute.
I'm riding by the sign and come in.
I mean, you know what? Yeah, I do need to come in and see, yeah, what you got going on. But yeah, I see when I ride by. I see that. I'm like, oh, I'm like, this is nice.
I haven't been nice. In there myself. I need to go get in her office.
Yeah, you but can't, yeah, you can't miss it.
You get bigger and bigger and bigger. And yeah. Bigger. I yeah. love it.
Mm-hmm. I love it. I love this. Thank y'all. This
Thank is you. Well, we are going to say goodnight.
We are here to inspire her.
Night, everybody.
Yeah. I'm sorry, Miss Erlene.
She said that's what the young people call her. Okay, all right.